And you say this fat cat traveling around with his mama? Jones asked, making a mental association. Uh-huh. Darlene folded her handkerchief and slipped it into her bosom. I sure hope they don't ever decide to hang around here again. I'll really be in trouble. Jesus. Darlene sounded worried. Look, we better do something about this place before Lana comes back. But listen, don't knock yourself out cleaning up this dump. I never seen it really clean since I've been here. And it's so dark in here all the time, nobody can tell the difference. To hear Lana talk, you'd think this hole was the Ritz. Joan shot out a fresh cloud. Through his glasses, he could hardly see anything at all. Patrolman Mancuso enjoyed riding the motorcycle up St. Charles Avenue. At the precinct, he had borrowed a large and loud one that was all chromium and baby blue, and at the touch of a switch, it could become a pinball machine of flashing, winking, blinking red and white lights. The siren, a cacophony of 12 crazed bobcats, was enough to make suspicious characters within a half-mile radius defecate in panic and rush for cover. Patrolman Mancuso's love for the motorcycle was platonically intense. The forces of evil generated by the hideous, and apparently impossible to uncover, underground of suspicious characters seemed remote to him this afternoon, though. The ancient oaks of St. Charles Avenue arched over the avenue like a canopy, shielding him from the mild winter sun that splashed and sparkled on the chrome of the motorcycle. Although the days had lately been cold and damp, the afternoon had that sudden, surprising warmth that makes New Orleans winters gentle. Patrolman Mancuso appreciated the mildness, for he was wearing only a t-shirt and Bermuda shorts, the sergeant's costume selection for the day. The long red beard that hooked over his ears by means of wires did manage to warm his chest a little. He had snatched the beard from the locker while the sergeant wasn't looking. Patrolman Mancuso inhaled the moldy scent of the oaks and thought, in a romantic aside, that St. Charles Avenue must be the loveliest place in the world. From time to time, he passed the slowly rocking streetcars that seemed to be leisurely moving toward no special destination, following their route through the old mansions on either side of the avenue. Everything looked so calm, so prosperous, so unsuspicious. On his own time, he was going up to see that poor Widow Riley. She had looked so pitiful, crying in the middle of that wreck. The least he could do was try to help her. At Constantinople Street, he turned toward the river, sputtering and growling through a declining neighborhood until he reached a block of houses built in the 1880s and 90s, wooden Gothic and Gilded Age relics that dripped carving and scrollwork. Boss tweed suburban stereotypes, separated by alleys so narrow that a yardstick could almost bridge them, and fenced in by iron pikes and low walls of crumbling brick. The larger houses had become impromptu apartment buildings, their porches converted into additional rooms. In some of the front yards, there were aluminum carports, and bright aluminum awnings had been installed on one or two of the buildings. It was a neighborhood that had degenerated from Victorian to nothing in particular, a block that had moved into the 20th century carelessly and uncaringly, and with very limited funds.